everybody. I want to welcome you out today to a brand new episode of the Let's Talk Local podcast. I am your host. My name is Chris Hollifield. I want to thank you for joining me for another episode of the podcast as I continue this adventure through this beautiful state of Utah, where I'm chatting with locals, professionals, everyday people, business owners, comedians, authors, food truck owners, really anybody and everybody that, you know, they're doing some cool things here in the state of Utah. And I want to bring them on the podcast, have them share their story so everybody can get to know them a little bit better. Because I'll tell you what, we have some amazing people that are doing some really cool things in this state. Like today on the podcast, Daniel Benitez from Salsa del Diablo joins me. He joins me in the podcast studio. And oh my gosh, you guys, I still remember the first time when I was living right in downtown Salt Lake City and I walked over to the downtown farmer's market right there in Pioneer Park. You know, it was a brisk Saturday morning. I remember walking over there and I stumbled upon this salsa booth. And I remember trying some of this salsa. You know, and I love salsa. I'm not a salsa fanatic, but I love a good salsa. And I remember trying this salsa and just instantly falling in love with it and being like, oh my gosh, this stuff is incredible. If you have not tried Salsa del Diablo, especially after listening to this interview that I did with Daniel here in just a minute, oh my gosh, you got to get your hands on some of this. And it was such a great conversation with Daniel. I mean, we got to find out about the history of Salsa del Diablo. We got to find out about all the different salsas that he makes and has made and the obstacles and challenges that he's faced with the salsa and kind of what's in store for Salsa del Diablo. I mean, what a great story. What a great guy. So awesome to get to know him better. And, you know, let him on the podcast here and chat for a little while and get to know him. And hopefully you guys will enjoy getting to know his story as well. So anyway, yeah, like I said, try some of their salsa. Try some Salsa del Diablo. And on that note, grab a bag of chips, grab some salsa, and let's jump into that conversation that I had with Daniel Benitez from Salsa del Diablo. Let's get into it, you guys. All righty, let's get chatting about salsa.
Nice.
The wonderful, wonderful world of salsa. That is a tongue twister. I went to go record that twice and I almost stumbled up the second time. But Daniel, I want to get to know you, man. I want to get to know your salsa. For people that don't know about Salsa del Diablo, I want to make sure to say that correctly.
That's correct.
I'm familiar. I see you in stores. I got familiar with you at the downtown farmers market, downtown Salt Lake City. But I'm sure that there are a lot of listeners that have never tried your products.
Yep.
They're unfamiliar with who you are. Mm-hmm. So let's start right off at the beginning with who you are and what it is that you do and what it is that you make, I guess.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, my name's Daniel Benitez, and I'm the owner of Salsa del Diablo. We've been in business almost 10 years now. Started with three of my favorite salsas that I came up with. We're up to 60 plus salsas now.
60?
60, yeah.
Wow.
So we do a ton. Part of that big number is we source a lot of stuff locally. So we do like seasonal ones that, you know, a farmer across the way, the Bangor farm, they might have something in season that will work well, and I'll figure out a recipe for it.
Okay.
And then we'll do that one for 1 month out of the year or something. So that's kind of part of that, you know, big number, but they usually become part of our repertoire. Well, the next year we'll do it again, but it's just for that 1 month. So people know,
gotcha.
Like, hey, it's this time of year and I know it's seasonal. I know you're not going to have it very long, and they'll come and they'll buy, you know, two or three of that particular salsa. So it's kind of a fun passion of mine. Seems like I've always loved to cook. I made salsa for a long time and lived in California, lived in Arizona, and me and my wife made Utah our home. And it's actually like kind of her doing that we started the business too, because I was just making salsa and giving it away to people I work with. And she's like, oh, you should just try to sell it, see what happens. So I said, oh, you know, I'll look into it. So I ended up starting, I worked at REI,
okay,
a big store downtown, and I started selling it to workers there, and people loved it. I was selling quite a bit for how, you know, small scale that was. And I was like, oh, there might be something here. So then I went to the Bountiful Farmers Market, got into that one. I was still working full time, and we started selling at that market. And it was a crazy roller coaster ride. It was so hard. I was up to like 1 a.m. a lot of nights, and, you know, just trying to keep up with balancing a toddler, a full-time job, and a new business, which was crazy and scary, and didn't know what that was going to look like. And yeah, it just started taking off from there. And
what kind of work were you doing during this time? Like, if you don't mind me asking, you got into salsa.
Yeah. I was a manager at REI.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. So, you were selling it. Okay. At REI.
Yeah. But retail, that's another tough world where it's like the hours are tough. And so I had to balance, you know, these retail hours with making salsa and, you know, having a family and
sure.
Yeah. It was something.
Was your goal with making the salsa, once you started selling it, and you realized that people would buy it, and you're like, well, maybe there's something here. Did it click with you that, like, maybe you wanted to turn it into a full-time business, or was it, when did that click with you? And you're like, maybe I could turn this into something.
Yeah, that took a while. 'Cause I probably did salsa and full-time for 2.5 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And we got into a couple grocery stores, but weren't really pushing it too hard, and we got into the downtown farmers market, and that really kind of put us on the map, and we were all of a sudden like 5 times busier than we were before. But still, I was like, oh, I don't know if this is a hobby or if this is something that's going to make money. So it was probably 3 years into it when, you know, we started to really gain a good customer base. We were in a couple grocery stores when our lives were, it was just too difficult to try to, you know, balance all of those plates. And, me and my wife just talked about it and like, okay, I think this seems like it could work, you know, might as well try now and see, you know, I'm passionate about it.
To do it full time.
Yeah. To do it full time.
So you had it in stores, you were doing the downtown farmers market in Salt Lake.
Yeah.
And you were still working full time on top of that.
Yeah. And we were still doing the Bountiful Farmers Market. And then
that's what I mean. Multiple farmers markets.
Yep.
Store. Were you in because you're in Harmon's, right?
We didn't get into Harmon's yet. We're in like a couple Macy's and then the store in Holiday, and they had 2 locations at the time. So 2 of them there. So we're probably in like 7 stores, but it was,
did you have employees yet, or you were doing it all? I mean, you and your wife, your wife was helping you
me and my wife, and we'd have like
friends come over,
friends
you would be like, I'll give you some beer if you come and help me, right?
I mean, pretty much like at the farmer's market, it's like, hey, we need help. It's crazy. We're going insane. And we just have friends that would come help us. And yeah, kind of help us get through that crazy time.
Well, our brains are programmed to give up, right? Like we're programmed to not do difficult things. We want the easy way.
Yeah.
And already listening to what you've done, I've done downtown farmers markets. I know how it is. You got to get there at like 6 a.m, man, 7 a.m, depending on what kind of booth you have. And I would imagine your booth probably takes a little longer to set up. Maybe not.
Yeah. No, we have a double booth.
And, yeah. So, but I mean, it's a lot of work. And so just that market and just to produce everything and to package everything, what kept you going? Why did you want to throw the towel in?
Oh, man, me and my wife are really stubborn.
Okay. So I mean, was she pushing you, or you were pushing, I mean, or you just pushed each other?
Yeah, I think we both like just didn't want to give up. And we both saw the potential. We're both from like, she's from Tucson. I'm from California. And the market and salsa and Mexican food at the time wasn't like our style. And we knew there was a big like gap in the market. But I don't think people who lived in Utah knew there was a big gap in, you know, because they were used to like, you know, whatever they're finding grocery stores, like this is, you know, good Mexican food and there's good Mexican food places. And for us, it was like, well, you need to try some of this other stuff because we knew we were bringing something totally different. So we saw that potential. We were really stubborn. And I think, we just...
You just kept doing it. You just did it.
Yeah, just put our heads down and kept doing it, yeah.
And then when you took that leap to do it full time, I mean, your wife wasn't working either, right?
No, she was working full time.
She was working full time, and she stayed working while you went and did it full time. Yeah. Okay, so you had that support. But what was it, scary for you? Was that a scary, and was it all of a sudden you're like, okay, I'm my own boss. I have nobody to report to. Like if I don't work, because I know how that is when I've done my entrepreneur things, where it's like, wait a minute here. Like if I don't get up in the morning, like, and I'm not working, I'm not going to get a paycheck. I mean, did that fear set into your head at all?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was scary then. I mean, it's still scary now for sure. Cause you're like, okay.
You still have days you wake up where you're like, I don't know, maybe I need to go get a job.
Yeah. I mean, there's still, I mean, we're pretty established and we're in 60 plus stores, but it's still hard, really hard. It's harder than most, like, you know, 9-to-5 full-time jobs are. I think that, it was scary, but.
But you did it.
But yeah. And it seems like too, like I just kept coming up with salsas that people loved and I'm like, oh, it seems like I have a knack for this. Like this isn't just, I got lucky on a couple things or, you know, whatever it is, or just hit it right. It was like, and I'm still making them that I'll come up with in like a day or two and people will love. So it seems like I'm on the right path of what I should be doing. You know, maybe at the beginning, I definitely didn't know that. I was just kind of like, oh, here's another one. I hope people like it. As I kept doing it, I was seeing that a little more each time, like, oh yeah, this is, people love this. It's really good. And it's unique. And it's something that Utah has never had.
Now you said at the beginning, you talked about, you had 60 salsas. Now, obviously all 60 aren't always in production.
Nope.
What are your, I mean, you probably have, a few main ones, right? Yeah. Like how many main salsas do you have? Like is that what you would call them? Your main salsas?
Yeah. Yeah. We got kind of the ones we have in grocery stores. We call our, like, we even have them organized that way at our farmer's market booth. It's like, these are salsas we make all the time.
Yeah.
They're available all year round and they're available in grocery stores. So there's about 8 of them. We do like a tomatillo guacamole. We do a mango salsa. We do a roasted chipotle. We do a restaurant style salsa. We do a pico. We do a chipotle crema.
There's like a cashew one or something. Right?
Oh, yeah.
That was like my favorite one. Yeah.
A cashew dream.
Yeah.
We do a Mexican street corn.
That's a good one too.
And we do a queso that's not in all stores, but that's like a one we do all the time. Yeah, it's funny. The cashew one, speaking of like kind of going back to the beginning, when I first came up with that one, a fun story is like I brought it home for my wife to try. And I'm like, hey, you know, I came up with this. You should try this. I feel like I know it's really good and I think people will like it. So I'm like looking for the chips, you know, looking around the kitchen and the salsa's on the table. I'm like, oh man, I can't find chips anywhere. And I'm, you know, go back and see my wife like at the table and she has a spoon and she's just like scooping it in her mouth, like almost nonstop. And I was like, oh man, I think I hit something there.
It's like, yeah.
She loved it. So that was like the first time in the creation of the cashew dream, which was an interesting one to sell at the farmer's market, because when I came up with that one, which was like 7.5-8 years ago, I don't know, but close to the beginning, it was vegan and we were like, we would promote it as that, like, oh, hey, here's a vegan option. But at that time, vegan was a bad word. Like people would be like, oh, I don't want to try that one. So we learned pretty quickly. We're like, oh, try this cashew sauce. And we wouldn't tell them it's vegan until like they ate it and decided they loved it.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, and it's vegan too. And they're like, oh, really? You know, I'd be like so surprised. So.
Now it's like, I just tell somebody it's vegan. Okay, well, let me buy a case of them.
Yeah. You know? Now it's trending and people love, you know, that alone, but it was kind of fun to see that one grow for sure.
So you sparked a thought in my head, and you know, when I chat with people, this is typical in a lot of these food people that I chat with, but is your kitchen, I mean, still to this day, I would imagine you're trying to come up with new salsas and experimenting. You must just have salsa out the wazoo at your house, right?
Like, yeah, we have two shelves like of salsa at all times.
Yeah. I mean, you probably got neighbors coming over like, hey, do you have any salsa I can have?
Yeah, it's funny, we used to have a bunch of people do that that would come by, and we don't really give stuff to people in the neighborhood now, but
yeah,
it's kind of funny how that happens. You know, the word spreads that way. But yeah, I have a lot at the house. I mean, I just came up with like a new one, a Morita salsa, and then a habanero one that's almost in the hot sauce realm. And we are doing hot sauces too. So
yeah,
yes, I got into that world. So we're doing like four different hot sauces. But yeah, I think there's a lot there. I mean, I use our kitchen at home as a test kitchen a little bit, but probably mostly at our commercial kitchen is where I'm doing a lot of the tinkering.
Do you ever get sick of salsa? Do you ever just like, I just cannot eat anymore? Or you probably just take like little breaks, man.
No. I mean, to be honest, like I make so many salsas and they're so unique and so delicious that,
yeah.
I mean, I might not bring one home for a while because I'm like, oh, you know, I've had enough of that one for a while and I'm switching to something else, but we eat our salsas all the time. And that's another like interesting thing with, I guess, the Utah world versus like my growing up. I would have salsa with like almost every meal.
Sure. Your Cheerios, right?
Yeah. Cheerios. But like eggs and just so much stuff. So I think that I utilize them, you know, for that application and don't eat them very much, chips and salsa. It's more like with eggs. It's more like, you know, with meat. It's more that kind of thing than, I guess, which most people think of as like chips and salsa.
Chips and salsa. Yeah, that's, I guess that would be more of the American way of of doing it, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
we think of, what is it? Is it Applebee's that has I don't know. I don't know the salsa, the chips, right? I don't know. Anyway, but, so you mentioned hot sauce.
Mm-hmm.
You're making hot sauce. How long have you been doing that?
Oh, man, a little over a year now.
Okay. So it's pretty new.
Yeah, so pretty new. And just something that, I don't know, I saw the kind of the same thing in the market. Like this, I mean, now there's tons of hot sauces. So maybe it was about 2 years ago when I thought of it. But I've tried a ton of them. And what I was finding that they were like heavy in vinegar, similar flavor profile. Not all of them the same, but I was like,
goes well together though.
Yeah.
Hot sauces and salsa.
And then it was also another outlet for like, hey, I'm trying your salsa. I love it, but I'm just visiting from Utah County or, you know, somewhere else. And I can't refrigerate it for, I'm going to be here till 8 o'clock. And so it gives someone an opportunity like, oh, I love it. And I'm going to buy something that I'm going to take home with me rather than a refrigerated salsa that I can't. So, you know, you kind of lose that.
Do you ship these at all? Can you ship like it, like for people? Cause I know a lot of businesses have that capabilities and like refrigerated styrofoam, or I don't know how that works, right? Overnight or something.
Yeah. It's kind of a pain, but yeah, we do that like all over the country.
Have people done it? Do you get a few orders that way?
Yeah. We probably average 2 orders a week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So a decent amount. Like this time of year, it's more mellow. Like we have one this week. We had one last week. More around Christmas time, we'll get a lot of people who live here and, you know, maybe we're transplants and they'll ship stuff to like family in Texas or family in California. So kind of all over. So we get really busy then, which is super cool. That's like our bread and butter growth is like all the transplants from, you know, California, Arizona, Texas that are used to salsa, are used to more our style of salsa. So they love, when they find us at the farmer's market, they love it and they're super excited. And we get such great feedback from them. Even like, you know, people who live in California or who live in Texas are moving here and they're like, oh my God, I can't find anything like this where I live, which is, you know, a good testament to what we're doing.
Now you mentioned it's a pain in the butt. So I apologize for promoting this shipping, but I do have listeners, you know, that's one thing about this podcast. You mentioned people that have moved away, transplants, yeah, stuff like that. I get a lot of listeners that have maybe moved away from Utah or are interested in Utah. They don't live here. If they wanted to order some of your salsa that, yeah, way, how would they, I mean, is there a way to do that on the website,
yeah,
then, or like an order form, or do they just call you up directly, or,
no,
or,
yeah, what? So they just need to go to our website. It's salsadeldiabloutah.com. And then once you get there, there's like a couple different tabs. There's like a delivery tab, and then there's a shipment tab. So you have to do the shipment option.
Mm.
But yeah, we'll ship pretty much anywhere in the in North America. We don't ship to Canada, Alaska, and Hawaii. But other than that, almost all of the states.
Oh, but yeah, you got something against those guys. No, I'm just kidding with you. Just giving you a hard, yeah, time. Well, I didn't even realize that. So that's a really nice option. And then other than that, I mean, you don't have a physical storefront, right?
No.
Any plans ever for a physical storefront?
Not really. I don't know. We own a commercial kitchen,
yeah,
in South Salt Lake. And there's like plans to, or thoughts to expand, not plans. But if we ever did that, we might make that as like a potential option. But I think as we expand in grocery stores, there's not really the need to,
sure, sure. Well, yeah, that's kind of what I was going to say here on the podcast is, where can people get it? But, you know, that'd be fun to get something like with a kitchen in the back and then a front, you can have a little storefront,
yeah,
or something like that. Yeah. But where can people buy, like what are some of the main places, I guess? Yeah. You're probably in a lot of places, but what are some of, yeah, the main places, sure, here in Utah?
Yeah, we're in all the Harmons along the Wasatch Front.
Okay.
We're in all of the Whole Foods. We're in a bunch of the Macy's. Not all of them, but pretty much anything that's like, I would say, within like 25 miles of Salt Lake, all the way down to Spanish Fork, and all the way north to like Centerville for Macy's. And then we're in a bunch of like little like mom and pop shops, the store. We're at the Market in Park City, Fresh Market in Park City. A couple of like cool ones. We're in a couple of barns, like the Red Barn down south. It's in like Santa Quinn.
I'm unfamiliar. Oh, don't hang out at the Red Barn.
And then we're also at Wall Brothers Barn down in Spanish Fork. And like fun kind of story about those guys too is like my thought of like most of the stores when we get into like Utah County, we sell like okay. I don't know. It's like I think people think our stuff is spicy, so it's a little deterrent for them maybe to try at the get-go. But we got, just by chance, someone reached out to us from a place called Wall Brothers Barn in Spanish Fork, and they like love our stuff, and we kill it there. We sell so much salsa out of the Spanish Fork Wall Brothers Barn. Wow. I mean, it's like one of our top five stores, maybe seven stores. But that's, it really like opened my eyes, like, oh my gosh, like this is down south where I didn't think we'd sell very well, and we're like killing it. But they're like really like great promoters of our product, and they sample our product there. And it's, I feel like our stuff is something that like if people try once, they're like, oh my God, that, you know, they're hooked.
Sure.
So that's kind of cool. But yeah, we just keep expanding, but I want to do it. I try to do it very thoughtfully. And, you know, we do like small batch salsa, and we, there's so much like, manual preparation involved that I don't want to grow too fast to where we're just not able to keep up with quality.
Sure.
Any
out of state yet or nothing probably out of state?
We sell one place that like we probably deliver to once a month. It's in Fruta,
where's that?
Colorado.
Oh, Colorado. Okay.
Yeah. It's called Skips.
Skips.
Yeah.
Shout out to Skip.
Yeah. It's a cool little place in Colorado. And if you haven't been to Fruta, it's such a cool
place. No, I've never been there.
Oh, man. So my whole family, we mountain bike a lot. My boy's on a couple of mountain bike teams, like downhill, and like he's a ripper mountain biker. But we'll go down there because it's such a cool like mountain bike mecca. And we just kept going. And I talked to one of the owners at the Skips place, and they we always bring salsa with us everywhere we go. So I brought them some samples and they loved it.
And he was like, I want to carry it.
The next time I brought it. And, you know, so now they're like a seasonal place because it gets so hot in Fruta. It's like 105 probably average all summer long. But like spring and fall, we bring stuff down there. So, yeah, that's kind of our out-of-state place. But I think ultimately, like the California market would make sense for us.
Sure.
Colorado.
Dude, all the markets would make sense to you, man. Just like, let's get this big, right? But, I mean, is there any advice that, I mean, you've been doing this for a minute. You've been running a business. I'm sure you've had to, you know, your ups and downs. You've had your days where you want to throw the towel in. You've learned a lot. What is one or two pieces of advice to somebody who might be in the starting stages of a business, right? Like, just, let's just make it generic.
Yeah.
You know, just, do you have any business advice you would give somebody?
Yeah. So that's interesting. We get people. So like I said, we own a commercial kitchen and I kind of treat it as a somewhat of an incubator kitchen where I actually give businesses advice. Usually people have to get to like a certain level to where it makes sense to give them advice. So let's say someone's like, hey, I want to do this. I'm going to start, I haven't started yet, but I'm going to do all these things. It's tough. Like they almost have to like go through those first stages and then like, okay, now let's have a conversation because you made it past this point. Cause I see so many others who are like at that first stage and think it's going to be fun. And they're like, oh, I'm not doing this. This is, So once they get to that stage, what I usually do is try to figure out what their goal is. You know, do they want to grow slow and be at farmers markets, go to stores? So then I try to help them with that. So for example, one business that was in our kitchen, they kind of wanted that route. And so they came to me and like, oh, can you give me your contacts in stores? And I'm like, okay, well, first, like, you know, tell me about your product. Let me know your pricing. And so they told me that, and I was like, well, that's on the higher end of what your product is. But, and then their stuff was only good for, I think like 7 to 10 days at the time.
Oh, like a shelf life.
Yeah, shelf life. Yeah. And I was like, okay, you have to increase that. You're going to just end up like throwing away so much product. So it was a good conversation to have, not necessarily like one piece of advice, but like, okay, this is like a huge gap in your business to where you need to improve this before we could even really have this conversation about, okay, now we could get into stores. Because if you get into stores and you're a new product and you're only good for 7 days, I mean, it's going to be 80% of your product. You're going to have to like pull back off the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that varies a little bit. Another person who was in our kitchen, you know, she came to me with questions and I had seen her production a little bit in the kitchen. And so I came back to her with like, okay, your efficiency isn't there. There's so much labor into what she was doing. An awesome product, loved it. But it wasn't viable. Like she needed to come up with like quicker ways of producing her product. So I went through with her. I'm like, hey, here's a couple things I thought that might help you with this. So those are like some like real world examples of what I tell people. I think the generic advice I've given people is, you know, they come to me and they're like, hey, I have this idea. I want to do this. I kind of get an idea of like, okay, you have something to fall back on, whether it's like a spouse with a job or, you know, something like that. Like maybe you have this idea, maybe, you know, stay in your job for a little while just to make sure it's viable before you're like going all in. I think that in my case, I waited a little too long for that. Like, but I was a little more cautious with that. But I think when I talk to people, that's one thing I let them know. And then I'd say the second bit, I don't know if I'd call it advice, but I'd say reality is when people say like, oh, you know, this looks like fun. I could set my own hours.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, here's the reality.
Here's the reality.
You're going to lose all your weekends for like,
the rest of your life.
The next 2 to 3 years. You're probably not going to make a profit for several years unless you don't want to like reinvest in the business. So, you know, a lot of our profit went like, instead of, oh, you know, let's keep saving all this. Like, okay, if we're going to grow, we have to buy 2 more vans and we have to do this. So I try to like make it really realistic with people. Like, okay, I love that you're passionate about this. You know, for sure, give it a try. But here, it's hard. It's way harder probably than anything you've ever done. And, you know, here are some things to, you know, prepare you for that. And if you could get past some of those, then you know, you might have a chance at growth and, you know, having a viable business.
One thing I meant to ask you in the beginning, mm-hmm. and I didn't ask you, is this your first entrepreneur endeavor? Like, is this your first, you know, a lot of people I talk to, they're like, I tried 10 things before. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You know, I tried these handfuls, but this is your first shot at something.
Yeah, huh? First thing. Yep.
So, I mean, I'm sure there was some mindset stuff you had to work through, right? I mean, did you hire a mentor or a coach for any of that or any kind of business coaches or anything?
Nope.
Nothing.
Yeah. I mean, I think at the beginning I had a ton of like really great like family, friends that helped a lot. And not just helped with like, hey, help us at the farmer's market or whatever, but like, oh my God, you're out of your mind lately. Like maybe we could, you know, watch your kid for the night and you go do something. Or, my wife's parents would come a lot and like, just help us like, hey, you know, we'll help you label so you don't have to be up till like 2 a.m. So I think those were like those little things that made a huge difference along the way of just having, you know, just a little bit of, like reality check and guidance and just giving us a little bit of a break where it's like, sometimes we were pretty close to like breaking and it's like, oh my God, if we have to stay up till 2 a.m. again, that's it. We're done. So that was extremely helpful.
How do you balance like family and work life? I mean, cause I would imagine, cause I know how it is. Even, again, I use myself as an example and I know, with me, sometimes I don't know how to shut myself off. Mm-hmm. I feel like if I'm not working, then I'm not like, I just need to always be working or always be working on something, doing something. Do you find that with yourself or do you know how to like go home at 5 o'clock and shut yourself off?
Yeah, I would say that's probably something I need to work on. Like I definitely notice it. Definitely so this summer is a good example. We do a lot of like road trips for my boys, mountain bike team and races and different things. And it was so nice for me to like almost force me to shut it off. Cause like, I'm not there to like promote the business. I mean, we bring salsa for the team and they love it.
Of course.
But yeah, I wouldn't really like talk about salsa very much unless someone asks and I wouldn't. But yeah, I think that when I'm just in my everyday life, because we're getting recognized a little bit more, that comes up a lot. So it's like, oh, you know, I want to talk to people about it, but I think it is tough sometimes with my, you know, boys rolling his eyes. I'm like, okay, I need to cut this short. He's like ready to go. So it's a difficult thing, but I think the last couple of years I've really made it a point, like, you know, it's kind of like, I'm not going to miss these races.
Sure.
I'm going to enjoy camping trips with my family and really, and not just like shutting it down, but also like, okay, I used to like, okay, there's another event. Let's do that one. Another event. Let's do that one. But the last couple of years, I'm like, okay, maybe we could do that, but we're not going to be the ones doing it. We don't have the staffing for it. We're not doing it. And we're taking time off as a family. So that's been, I would say the last couple of years, it's made it much more sustainable. Like I think the route we were going the first 4 years, it was,
Not sustainable.
Yeah. Luckily we were so stubborn. We made it work, but I think if we didn't like figure out
I don't think a lot of people could have.
Oh God.
Right. Like a lot of people give up. Right.
Yeah. Without a doubt. Yeah.
Was that tough for you to kind of hand the keys over to somebody else? Like when you would go away, mm-hmm. like let's say you did go to one of your mountain biking things or went camping and all right, you're going to run farmer's market this weekend or, you know, even your first employee.
Yeah.
Cause I know how I am where I tend to want to be. I want to be the one who does everything.
Yeah.
Is that how you are?
Yeah. It was for the longest time. I think that switch, what I was talking about of like, okay, I need to enjoy more family time and continue that on. I think that's
kind
coincided.
Of
where it's like, okay, I know I need to make the salsa, but I'm going to train someone to where they're going to get 95% of the way there. And I have to be okay with that. Or I'm just not going to be able to, you know, sustain. So I taught people and trained them for a long time to be able to, okay, now they're like at that 95 to 100% range. And that's awesome. So that was a big step. And then we have a couple people or several people that work for us for the farmers market that are just awesome. There's a, we've had this, grade school teacher. She was a first grade teacher and now she's, doing kindergarten. She's been with us for a long time. Her and her partner help us. They'll like, help us at the downtown farmers market. And then they do the Sunday Wheeler market by themselves. And they are awesome. Like, they do a better job than me. So I was totally fine letting that go. The downtown market's another beast though, just because we're so busy there now. We have to have like at minimum four people, but usually five people just to like keep up. And like,
in case somebody uses the bathroom or something, yeah. Right? Just to sneak yeah. away. Yeah. That downtown farmer's market, but that's a special farmer's market, yeah. man. That is, there is just something beautiful about it.
Yeah,
it's
awesome.
It is, it's an event every Saturday.
Yeah.
I mean, and the sad thing is, and the ridiculous thing is now, okay. So this should go up, cause it goes through October, right?
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, there's still a few weeks left probably of the down. Yeah. If you have, if you're listening to this right now and you have not experienced the downtown farmers market, it's still from 8 to 2, right? Those are the hours, right?
Yep, eight to two,
right on the corner. It's like 400 South, 300 South and,
like Northwest.
Yeah. Right down there, Pioneer Park, right downtown. Go check it out. Yeah. I mean, I mean, all the vendors there are great.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's, I always tell people it's like some of the best like food and ideas and creativity.
Just the atmosphere there, yeah. man. Just yeah. the vibes there, the music, the crafts, just everything, man. Yeah. It's like a mini street fair every week.
Yeah, and I think you know farmers markets are super unique in the fact that I always tell people like you always get someone's best self at the market is because I think people like just have a good time,
yeah.
relax more. And just really enjoy themselves versus, you know, compared to like a grocery store or something where it's a little more like regimented yeah. and I like got my list. Like people are just there to have a good time. So
what do you think? I know we kind of chatted a little bit about this before I hit the record button, Daniel, but what are your thoughts on all the growth in Utah? I mean, let's, you know, for the record, yeah. for the microphone here, I uh-huh. mean, I guess we did sort of talk about it, but so we'll just kind of re-talk about it here, but yeah, what are your thoughts on it, man?
Yeah, it's been pretty wild. So we live pretty close to downtown.
Yeah.
So we've seen a ton of growth. Like it doesn't seem like there's an empty grass, anything anymore. If it's not a park, it has a townhome or
yeah.
condos built on it or, I think I love it from the aspect of new people coming into our state and really like coming here to experience the outdoors, which I absolutely love. And I'm so glad that, you know, other people are doing it. I think that, you know, that's great. It's great for our business because we get so many transplants from all over yeah. the country that are looking for like really phenomenal food. So they seek us out. So I, you know, there's a lot of things I love about it. I think it's tricky, you know, as standpoint of, I lived here for a while now and I got a ski and snowboard.
It takes you 5 hours to get up to the mountain, man.
And it was like, I used to go, it was so easy. I could go like for 2 hours and not think twice about it. Cause you know, it didn't take, there was no traffic up or down. So that's been a challenging transition. And I don't know if there's a solution.
Yeah.
Inside. Yeah. There's not really a good solution that anyone's come up with at the moment. Especially for the how fast we're growing. So that's been a little tricky. Living downtown, I think there's, you know, things like homelessness.
Yeah, but do you remember when downtown used to be a ghost town? Like,
yeah.
like
especially complete, on a Sunday.
Oh, yeah, my gosh. Sunday.
Yeah.
I mean, now it's hopping all yeah. the time.
Yeah. So, it's good and bad. There's way better food options. I remember when I yeah. first moved here and I would ask people about, like, oh, what's your favorite, whatever? Like, sandwich shop and they're like, oh, you know, there's a Blimpies down the way.
yeah.
No.
Subway, right? Yeah.
Subway. Yeah. So yeah, so all of those things, I mean, it's great.
But it is tough. I think our secret is out, right? Yeah. And then what do you do? I mean, do you put a sign up to literally say, sorry, we're full?
Yeah.
I mean we will, I mean, there's only so much room here to grow.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. you know, I think that we could be more strategic about our growth and, you know, what's allowed and, you know, where we're growing. But I just don't feel like that's happening or going to happen. You know, I feel like it's just like, all right.
Yeah, what do you do?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't have the solution. I think that, gosh, you just got to put the right people in power to make you know, better decisions.
Sure.
And I don't know. I think that I always look at it and from the perspective of, okay, we're not the first people that dealt with this. There's a lot of other places that have, you know, been in kind of our shoes and had huge growth. And I always like to look at like, okay, what are some of those places? What solutions did they come up with?
Yeah.
Because, you know, kind of like the homeless thing here, or even the, like our pollution issue. Like I'm from California and I know those are two huge issues and they did like significant improvements in both of them. I mean, homelessness is still an issue there, but I think that we need to go to, you know, those kind of people and like, hey, you know, can we shadow you and figure out what you're doing and then bring that here to help help with some of this unique growth we're having. Cause otherwise I kind of feel like they're trying some things, like they're going to try to, they're trying to put, open up a little bit of land, downtown somewhere. So like, 50 up to 50 homeless people could have like a tent, city.
Yeah.
But that's, I mean, that's 50 people. Like I live close to Liberty Park and there's 300 people there.
Yeah. Like what are we going to do with the rest?
Yeah. It just, anyways, I mean, it's great to like test something, but I think we're past that. And I think people have already tested things and have you know, solutions that we could utilize.
So a few questions I ask on a lot of the podcast episodes, is, These are kind of my standard questions is, you know, we have family and friends, they visit us. Like, let's say you have some family come up from California or your wife's family and they, you know, they're here for the weekend, right? Like, let's say this next weekend they're coming to visit. They're like, ah, give us the tour, show us around, take us to some of your favorite places in, you know, in the area, right? Yep. Where would you take people to? What would you show them to? You know, I've had all different answers from you know, the Utah, you know, Salt Lake to Park City to the downtown temple, whatever. You know, I don't know where would Daniel take his family and friends?
Yeah, I guess it depends who's here, but I think more than likely we take someone up to Park City.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we do a lot of hiking and biking up there, so I think if it was I don't know, someone who could do the hiking and biking, we'd like to take them there.
Get them outside.
Yeah, yeah.
Get them outdoors.
And then there's also like, it would be like a conjunction. So everything we do like
is outdoors.
outdoors and revolve around food. So for example, if we go up to Park City, we would take them to like Five Seed after we did like a hike or a ride. Cause it's, I don't know if you've been there, but it's Five Seeds.
I haven't.
Okay, so it's one of the best like breakfast places in Utah.
Okay, I'll have to go try it out.
Yeah. But anyways, it's a great like, let's go do a long hike and have an amazing meal type place. So that'd be up there. We love Mill Creek. We probably take them up there as well. It feels a little more like secluded and like in the mountains. So that's a beautiful place for hiking, biking. Where else we go? We've taken family who have come here, like to the temple and downtown just to see everything.
You got to see the history.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is cool. And I think too, like you were saying, downtown has so much more to offer. So, I mean, there's really good coffee. I'm a super coffee snob too. Like I make a salsa with coffee in it. But like there's coffee places that are amazing and like,
oh, we got great coffee.
Yeah. There, and then friends from like Seattle or something like that, like we would take there knowing that they'd be like, oh man, we're surprised. You know, this coffee's really good
For Utah, right?
Yeah. I mean, for a lot of places, like there's a place called Honeysuckle that's by our house that's amazing. Yeah. Like Blue Copper, they're great. So we probably do that. And then there's a couple like urban fun little like Memory Grove's a nice one. Yeah. If it's like, you know, let's say it's like a older family member or something, you know, maybe they're not gonna do a hike up in the mountains, but that's such a cool place to just cruise around. And so it'd probably be like a hike, a walk, maybe take in, you know, some history of Utah and then an awesome place to eat or, you know, coffee.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What would you change about Utah if you could change one or two things, or maybe you wouldn't change anything?
Yeah, oh, that's a good question. I don't think I've ever thought about that.
Well, that's a good thing, then, I guess. You know, so sometimes I'll ask that question, and people just start going off. I'm like, wow, you've thought about this.
Yeah, yeah. I think the biggest thing in my world, and you know, which is kind of like this food outdoor world, I guess, is I think the it's coming, like with the newer generations happening, but I think that like just the need for like really good quality local food. I think that we're seeing that from a lot of transplants. But I think, you know, the vast majority of people here seems to me eat more of, you know, like fast food and chain restaurants. I'm hoping that like the growth we saw after pandemic, like continues, because we had a ton of people that were very like local focused. I think some of that's kind of gone away, but I think if people were a little bit more understanding of like why, like our example is like we're doing this really great quality salsa. We use local stuff. It's higher quality than anything you're gonna get, you know. And maybe you might pay a little bit more for it, but you know, here's something that you really need to try and enjoy. So I think that it's more of that like food culture, like it's not quite here yet, and there's certain things and an understanding of why, but I think that the more people get into food, I think it creates a uniqueness to the state, which, you know, we kind of have the fry sauce thing and casseroles.
Gotta love that fry sauce.
Yeah, yeah, but there's so, you know, so much more that's a possibility. And yeah, and I just think there's like a really good opportunity for that here. I don't know what that looks like. You know, it's kind of the hodgepodge right now of like food coming into the state. But I think if people really like embrace that, and, you know, hopefully that becomes more of the culture here.
Yeah. How can, as we kind of wind this episode up, I mean, first of all, thank you for coming and chatting with me and spending your evening, talking about your delicious salsa. But how can my listeners reach out to you and connect with you? Let's, you know, your website, social media, all those different ways. Let's rattle those off.
Yeah. Yeah. So website, salsadeldiabloutah.com, has links for a couple of different things there. You could order, you could contact us. You could find out, you know, where we're selling, like which farmers markets. We are also on Instagram, just salsa del Diablo. If you just type that in, we'll be like probably the first one that pops up. Same thing with, Facebook. So those are kind of the main ways to get in touch with us. And yeah, pretty responsive to all of those. Instagram's kind of the best way to get a quicker response from us, just because we're checking that all the time. It's also a great way. A lot of our customers will use that as a resource for, you know, oh, they're saying they're going to do some fun flavors. We'll post those every week so that people know what's coming up. Like this last week, I did one called a Guajillo Pesto. It has like coffee, honey, Utah honey in it, actually. I did one called Pumpkin and a Pepper. It's a pumpkin seed salsa. It's phenomenal. It's one of our like super popular seasonal ones. We did like an heirloom pico and one called Summer Brew with local corn, local squash from Bangor Farms. So it's kind of a good way to, you know, see what we're doing every week.
Sure.
Yeah. So
I bet you social media has like been really important part of your growth.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting to see too, like someone was just mentioning it this last week at the farmer's market, because they're like, oh, I noticed like these particular flavors sold really well. I'm like, oh yeah, we did a post about them. Yeah. And people are like, oh, I haven't heard about that one in a while, or I'm new to your, you know, I haven't purchased from your company. So they'll come and ask for those specifically, but yeah, it's pretty powerful.
Anything else you want to add before we wrap this up? I mean, again, I appreciate you coming and recording. I like to ask that because a lot of times I would wrap these episodes up and people would be like, oh, I wanted to mention something, or I wanted to talk about this. And it's like the mics are still hot. The record is still going. So I didn't know if there was, before we wrap this up, I mean, again, thank you for recording. But
yeah, my pleasure.
Anything else you want to promote? I know we kind of just skimmed the surface.
Yeah, I'm not really promote. Yeah, I think a couple of things that sometimes, you know, I don't forget about like from day to day, but like on these kind of things, that like I absolutely know we're here because like we had, you know, a great support system with awesome family, you know, good friends, and really like our staff is, especially like right now, our staff is so phenomenal. They're such awesome people. They make my job so much easier. So yeah, I really want to like call them out and thank them for that. That's a big part of our growth and, you know, what we're doing. And then I guess finally, like one thing I didn't really mention is that, you know, we kind of do like local stuff. We source locally. We work with a local farm called New Roots, and they're out of the IRC, which is International Rescue Committee.
Oh, wow. What do you have? What, tell me about them.
They're a super awesome one to partner with because they pretty much like refugees who come into Utah who their livelihood might have been like farming and food. They generally give them like a strip of land at the farm, and they'll use that to not only grow food for their families, but they'll also grow food to sell. So we source a lot of food from them throughout the summer, and it's, you know, directly helping a refugee family. In fact, there's several families that like kind of monitor our produce. But I just love like what they're doing, and I think, you know, more people should support them. And it's really giving people like a leg up when they're into like this whole new place. They don't know anything, but like this is such a good like piece to help them feel, you know, comfortable and at home and give them, you know, a livelihood. So that's been awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't even know about them, but you know, it's one thing I love about this podcast is getting introduced to all of this, you know, amazing things that we don't know, you know, is going on in our own backyard here in Utah.
Yeah, for right? sure.
And so, again, thank you so much, Daniel, for sitting down and chatting. I always tell people, you know, let's catch up down the road. Let's come through, you know, in a year or two down the road and see how the salsa business is treating you. See what you've added to the menu besides the salsa and the hot sauce. And what else would go good? I'm trying to think what else would go good. I you know, my mind is blank right now, but I'm sure there's something that's, you know.
Yeah. I mean, we're doing like a gourmet soups now too.
Okay. That would go really. So you make soups in too? Yeah. We didn't even get into that.
Yeah. So I have a chef who works for me in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And she has been like an awesome chef of like, in particular, soups.
Yeah.
So we talked about it. I'm like, oh my God, there's a gap for this. There's not very good soups in Utah.
No, there isn't.
At all.
No.
The grocery stores have a bunch.
I'm not a fan.
Yeah. So anyways, we started doing like, you know, I'd say like a Mexican twist on some of them, but not all of them. Like right now we're doing a creamy enchilada soup it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And it's like awesome because it's like she gets to be creative with it and we get to work together on it. But it's another thing of like, oh, you know, let's try something that, you know, I see a gap in the market and, you know, it seems like a fun thing to do and a selfish thing. Like I take the soups home every week.
Sure.
They're awesome. So,
wow, yeah. Man, you're going places, man. So, well, let's end the show. You're making me hungry now talking about all that soup. So again, thank you. And we'll just have to bring you back through.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
All right. Many thanks again to Daniel Benitez from Salsa Del Diablo for joining me on this episode. Like I said at the beginning of this episode, oh my gosh, if you have not tried some of their salsa yet, go get your hands on some, go try some, go buy some. Let me know what you think of it. Shoot me a text, 801-244-2908. I want to know what you think of Salsa Del Diablo Salsa. And hey, let's give some love to our show sponsor really quick, the Red Sign Real Estate Team. That's my real estate team. That's the real estate team that I'm on. So if you're looking to move to Utah, if you're looking to move across town, maybe you want to downsize, upsize, maybe you need an in-home office, I'd love to help you out. I'd love to answer any real estate related questions. You can go to my website, chris.redsign.com, or give me a call, 801-244-2908. Would love to chat, talk, and get to know you better. So anyway, on that note, many thanks to the Red Sign team for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast and whatever podcast app you listen to podcasts in, because I am here every week. I drop a brand new episode That way it gets sent right to your smartphone. And you guys have a great week, and we'll see you on the next episode. Love you.